Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome, everybody. Chuck Bonnywell, Julie Hayden. The truth straight up here on a beginning of fall, and it feels like it.
That's right. It does. It does. The show brought to you by happytrees.co, a great full service tree company, and Denver Synergenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Momentarily, we should have Cheryl Chumley joining us. She's a Washington Times columnist and author, has some interesting warnings, I guess, about what's happening to Christianity and religion in the country. Another day, another Trump lawsuit, right, Chuck? It's like the Attorney General of New York. She said before she was elected, she was going to sue Trump. Didn't matter for what. She just, I mean, you know, normally you'd think they'd be like, well, you know, I'll investigate him, and if he's done something wrong, we'll sue him. But this time she's like, no, we're just going to sue him. You can rest assured about that.
Bill Barr said it was a political hit job. And
right.
Again, kids is totally ridiculous.
I'm not going to bother to
I don't know, you know, the lawfare thing, you know, Republicans, the only way to fight fire is with fire, and they're going to have to start bringing cases in Texas and Florida against, I don't know, whoever.
Well, you know, we see that happen, I mean, with Ron DeSantis, right? So right. Ron DeSantis flies immigrants to, you know, to Martha's Vineyard, and now they turn around and sue him. But we have Cheryl with us here. Cheryl Chumley, as I said, a Washington Times columnist, author of a great book, when we've talked about this with her before, Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. Hey, Cheryl, thank you for your time. Welcome back to the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, it's great to be with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I saw your column in the Washington Times, and I just think this is such an important topic. And you were talking about a Pew Research study regarding Christianity and how that sort of ties into the future of our country. Why don't you kind of explain what the Pew report was saying?
So this most recent Pew Research Center study was based on projections. If all trends stay the same in America, by the year 2070, Christians will be a minority in this country. And that's not to say that it's definitely going to happen, but they were talking about all these different trends that they've been following for years now. And if nothing changes, Christianity will become a minority religion in America. And why that matters is, no matter what your faith is, America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and our Constitution, our laws, our guiding compasses are based on those biblical principles. And if we remove that from America, so goes our individual liberties.
Well, and I think, you know, that's exactly what the socialists want, right? And I think that's what you kind of talk about in your column. One of the things they want to do is remove God and religion as being sort of a guiding light and replace it all with the government, right?
Exactly. If you look at all the various battles that we have going on in this country, whether it's parental rights in schools or the LGBTQ agenda or even the economy, if you look at everything that's taking place in the political and cultural wars that we have, all roads lead back to the basic fight to retain God-given right and God-given rights as they pertain to the individual. It's basically a battle of collectivists versus individualists. And this country has been the stumbling block for the globalists of the world who want basically to take over the entire world and subjugate the entire world's citizens for just a few ruling elites. America is the stumbling block because we don't get our rights from government. We're born into them. We get them from God. And that's very difficult for collectivists to overtake. So this is why the big battle in America always leads back to the road of removing God. That's the ultimate end game of these leftists.
And if, hey, Cheryl, if I could, I don't know, or maybe if the BBS guys, your voice is really faint, so I apologize, but if you could maybe just speak up a little bit. Well, and I, you know, I took a look at the Pew study, and what it indicated, it's kind of interesting. You look at the demographics and it was saying this certainly doesn't have to happen, but they were saying currently, you know, of the people who identify as religious or Christian, by the time they're in their 30s, about a third of every generation sort of does not affiliate anymore. And they were saying, when you combine that with the decreasing birth rate, what you've got are fewer and fewer and fewer people sort of every time to become Christian in the first place. Which is kind of hard to get around, it seems to me.
It is. And look, if this poll were by itself, you could just say, well, that's interesting and move on. But it only comes after numerous polls in recent years that show America is growing more and more secular. Fewer and fewer Americans, even in the evangelical community, are going to church. There is a dramatic rise in nuns, that is to say people who don't really believe in any type of religion or faith. And when you put all that together, it leads us into this community, into this society that is growing more and more secular, sort of like France or your European countries. And when that happens, that's when we lose our very basis of American exceptionalism, which is God-given rights, because you can't have God-given rights if you remove God from society.
Right, right.
Well, you know, one thing they say, you want to destroy a society, you take away their gods first. And it seems that they're attacking twofold, one from the outside and one from the inside. I mean, even what were highly conservative groups like the Southern Baptists have now been overtaken and by the left wing of that group. Same with the
Catholics
and other ones. And so it's a twofold attack. Try to destroy the organization itself, and then make sure that no one joins it, because there's nothing really to join.
Absolutely. It's in the attack from the outside and the attack from the inside. Churches, as we've seen, have been losing many in their congregations. Particularly, we saw that under the coronavirus, where churches
right.
closed. And when they did reopen, fewer and fewer people went back to church. Not all churches. Some churches grew. And this goes toward your point. Too many churches in America have started watering down the Word of God, and so they're making churches very inoffensive as a way of reaching the masses, but it's not teaching truth that people internally yearn to hear. So those churches have lost a lot of their congregations. On the flip side, the churches that are sticking with the truthful, hardcore biblical principles, they've seen their membership rise, particularly after the reopening from the COVID clampdown. So churches in general are losing a lot of followers because they've become watered in their teaching. They've become progressive, teaching this social justice type of biblical teaching rather than the actual truth.
Well, and I think there's
and the biggest one of that is the Catholic Church under Pope Francis, who teaches a social justice form of Catholicism.
Climate change is big.
Yes.
Capitalism is evil. Borders are racist. Exactly. The Catholic Church has lost a lot of conservative followers in recent times because they have gone far left lunatic with some of
yeah.
their teachings that they ascribe to Jesus, wrongly so.
But, well, and I think an even bigger thing is, you know, again, when you read the research, the Pew report, it was saying that right now, even though there are a growing number of people who don't affiliate with the religion, it said the majority of those people still, like you said, believe in something. They believe in some sort of higher power. But that seems to be decreasing, and they predict certainly a possibility is that will continue to decrease. And I think there you have, that's why people are depressed, right? That's why they're just floating, you know, when you don't have a moral compass and your only compass is what your Twitter followers are screaming at you about. Everything gets screwed up. And I think it's dangerous in so many ways. One, like you said, it's the foundation of our country. But two, it's the foundation of our souls and our families and our lives to lose any kind of anchor or any kind of moral compass, a North Star, so to speak.
Yes, and as Joe Biden said, we're in the battle for the soul of America, right? That in itself is a truthful statement, because this is what we are ultimately fighting against the left about, the battle to keep God at the helm, to keep God in leadership of society and government in its rightful role of subservience to the people. And so if the more secular we become, the greater void that creates, with people looking for solutions, looking for something, looking to fill the voids in their own hearts. And that opens the door for government to enter and leave an even bigger footprint than it already is. So this is what Marxist countries know, communist countries know, right? That's why they want to remove God, because ultimately they want the worship of the people themselves. The government wants the worship of the people in communist society.
You know, how do we, I remember, you know, I haven't been in a TV newsroom for 5 years, but I was a TV news reporter for many years. And there was a time when I imagine it's even worse now, you just didn't talk about God. And if somebody mentioned God, I thank God for this, God for that in the sound, but you didn't put that in. There was just this, you're just kind of squeamish about talking about God, right? On the flip side of that, though, I do see in certain things, like in some athletes, right, you know, where they raise their hands to heaven or they kneel and things like that. So there is, on the one hand, I think this kind of pressure, I don't know, like peer pressure, social media pressure to not talk about God or acknowledge God. And yet you do, though, also see some people in somewhat high profile positions, you know, being willing to do that, too. Do you see that as hopeful?
I definitely see hope. I do see a backlash against this growing secularism in America, right? What we're seeing, I think, are the two sides being more finely defined than they have been in recent years. Because a lot of people, as you suggest, have been squeamish about talking about God openly, but it's always been kind of part of America's fabric, right? Maybe it's been quiet, and maybe a lot of people went to church on Sundays, and they carried their beliefs Monday through Saturday, but they just didn't talk about them. Well, now we're being told that you're not even allowed to think right about those beliefs Monday through Saturday that we pick up in church on Sunday. And you're starting to see some in the Christian community to say, hey, that's not okay. It's not the Christian community that is radical in America. That's the foundation of our exceptionalism. It's the secularists and the radical atheists that are the ones who are radical.
Right. Well,
back in American history, there are two great kind of reawakenings, religious periods of religious fervor, one in the 1760s and again in the 1830s. And I think it'll take something like that to get back the belief in God and a really excitement about God in your life. And hopefully we can have another great awakening, which would cause that to happen.
I wholeheartedly agree. In fact, that's exactly what I wrote about in my second to last book, Socialists Don't Sleep, Christians Must Rise, or America Will Fall. The title says it all, exactly what you were just putting forward. And I think in the end, that is our one true solution to secure American individual liberties into the future, because the political winds are too whimsical now. They flip and flop here and there. And I'm tired, I know for myself, of having my individual liberties change with each election. I would like to see them more solidified, as they once were in this country, as coming from above, from a creator, and not open to debate from government to give or take as it will.
Right. You know, and this is from Stephen. Cheryl, we do the show on Zoom sometimes with some people commenting in the chat section. Stephen says, our pastor had a sermon about church attendance. Once a month is now considered regular attendance. And he says, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod says over half of its members are 55 plus. Some churches are predicted to not exist in the next 10 to 20 years. Well, that's exactly what the Pew paper was saying, right? That the people who do identify as religious now or Christian now are increasingly older. And I mean, it does become sort of this spiral where, so you have fewer people being raised religiously themselves, and then you have people dropping out. I mean, I'm not sure, and Chuck, I like your talk about the Great Awakening, but what can be done? I mean, you'd think church leaders would be concerned about this. I mean, do you have any ideas, Joe? And we know how important it is to stop it, but any ideas on how to stop it?
Yeah, because what you spell out, when you look at it logically, it seems like a never-ending cycle, right?
Right.
Where one outcome brings the other outcome, and there's really no way out. And really, the way out is to turn to God, because when something looks undoable through the secular eyes, you have to look above. And so I think this is what God himself wants us to do now, to realize that we can't do this by ourselves. And as a note of optimism, I will say that there are some churches out there that recognize this, recognize the problem, and they also see the solution as doing just that. And they are making remarkable gains in their own respective communities about drawing people back into the church and teaching them how to fight, not just on the cultural field, but also politically. We're seeing a lot more Christians actually go into, say, local school board meetings and fight the right. evil agendas there, or running for offices themselves. And it's a slow moving solution, but at least it's moving in the right direction.
The key, like in almost all human things, is some charismatic leaders. Cotton Mather was one. The Wellesley brothers in the 1830s. In some ways, I suppose Billy Graham in the 1950s. You need somebody. People have to identify with particular people, and we've got to get some charismatic and at least honest and honorable religious leaders.
I would agree with that, and I would also add to it that God doesn't need a majority to do his work, right? As a matter of fact, he often works through the minority. He prefers it that way, because then the glory goes to him. And I think what we can all do is what you and I, we're doing right now, is talk openly about the need for God in America. Because as you said a few minutes ago, it used to be talked about sort of quietly. It was a queasy type of thing. Well, now let's drag it out in the open and let's just have the discussion. America needs God. And I'm betting the more people hear that, the more people will agree.
Well, and you know, and here's why I'm hopeful too. I think you're right. One, we've seen sort of in the Bible, things don't go well for the societies and cultures that totally turn their back on God, right? They have a way of ending badly there. and I think you're right. What did I read a book, and I forget who it was by, but it was great. It was like, if you want to walk on water, you have to get out of the boat. And I think you're right. I mean, I think that's a moment where we are right now, where we have to get out of the boat, and we have to put our faith in God and keep doing what we know needs to be done, even if we're the only ones doing it. Right. And I think that's great what you said, that we don't have to do it ourselves. Right. God's got this. We just have to do our part, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, don't expect to see the finish line wherever you are. Right. Because you start looking at all the work that has to be turned this nation back to its godly roots, that becomes overwhelming, and it makes you immobile. It freezes right. you, and you have the tendency to say, why bother? But all you have as an individual is do what God put you on earth to do, and to be willing to speak boldly, even if it makes you feel queasy or if it makes you feel uncomfortable. You know, you take those steps, you get out of the boat a little step at a time, and God will take over from there.
Well, Cheryl, that's good. That's good to know. And hopefully it'll happen before we become a socialist country. Where can people, because we'll let you go, where can people, your book, Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedoms, where can people find that, and where can people find out more about you?
You can go to my website, CherylChumley.com, and the links to all four of my books are there, along with all the endorsements and so forth. But you can also get them Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, and you can check out my writings at WashingtonTimes.com. And thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, great job. And thank you for bringing this up, and thank you for coming on our show and talking to our listeners about it.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a good night.
Okay. All right. Cheryl Chumley there. You can find, she's got a website, Cheryl, aptly named CherylChumley.com. You know, Chuck, I mean, you're the historian in this. How do you see this developing or unfolding, or because I don't think we can trust the religious leaders. You look at the Pope, for instance. I don't think you can count on him. I hate to say this because I'm Catholic, to do much of anything except expand his own, not God's, but his own agenda.
Well, hopefully there'll be new leaders and ones that can inspire people and get a movement going. I mean, Christianity is based on one person who is both God and man, but nonetheless, it's one people could identify with. It's very hard to have a religion based amorphously. That's why religions, the Unitarian Church and some of the other ones, have virtually disappeared. Because there's no human connection in those. They recognize a God, but nothing beyond that.
We had a friend who said, yeah, we believe in birds or something like that, right? I think Cheryl had a very good point, and it is worth making that, we should not expect to have to do this on our own, that it is perhaps a kind of thing that can only be done with God's help. But historically, though, this has come and gone, and yet God is still around, right?
Well, the pandemic was not a great moment for the American churches. A few fought back and refused to close, but most of them just rolled over dead. And I think that really hurt attendance all the way through. So there's going to have to be something that people can grab onto and want to be connected with.
What about, and now Cheryl makes a good point. I just have a couple more things to say about this, about in America particularly, it's based on that we have these God-given rights. And the same Pew thing was pointing out that in Great Britain, this switch to where more people did not believe in any kind of God than did believe in God happened like in 2009. And we've seen what's happened in Europe. What's your sense about religion? And it seems like religion is even, we saw the Queen's funeral that was mentioned, but less and less of a thing over the, in Europe?
Well, it depends on where in Europe. I mean, certainly Russia, parts of the Eastern countries, Poland, Hungary, they have pretty strong religious beliefs, and unlike France and Britain and some of the others. So there are places where religion is gain, because in those countries they were forbidden to have religion up until the 1990s when the Great Wall fell down.
From Sandra, I think people believe in God or at least a higher power, but do not belong to a church. That's true, Sandra. And that's what this Pew, and again, it's just, but they have a pretty good track record. But what they were saying is that there are a growing number. But what it said is right now, of the people who are not affiliated with the church, right, about half of a majority of those people still believe in a higher power. But they said, when you look at the trends, that is going down. So there is an increasing number of people, number one, not affiliating with any church. And of the people who aren't affiliating with any church, there is an increasing number of people who don't believe in any sort of higher power. And that, I think, is what the socialists, which I find it bizarre that anyone could believe that, but that's what the socialists want. I mean, that's what she's talking about. I think, Chuck, that's where the social, if as long as you believe in a higher power, whatever you want to call it, it's hard for socialists to take over. But if you don't believe in any higher power, then it's pretty easy for you to believe in the government.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's what communism does. There's no higher power. There's just this future wonderful Valhalla that'll be created on Earth. Which is, ludicrous since it's never has been.
It hasn't happened for the middle class yet. Well, let me go ahead and we're going to switch gears. Now, I want to talk about, another day, another lawsuit filed against Trump. The Attorney General, Letitia James of New York, announced a $250 million lawsuit, basically alleging that Trump exaggerated his assets for tax and insurance benefits. Trump noting in his comments that she's now a very tight race for AG with the Republican who's running for attorney general there. But Chuck, this is just, it's nothing other than, they raid his property. You've got the Manhattan DA saying, his company, Dodd gave employees perks to avoid taxes. I mean, it's a tax on every front, don't you think?
Well, it is, and that's all part of lawfare. And it's when Bill Barr says this is just a political hit job, I mean, it'd be nice if the governor of New York were going, this is pathetic. Of course, she's just as bad as Letitia James. So it's, you know, the Justice Department has lost any credibility, at least in my mind, and I think a lot of other people's mind. The AG for New York is just a political hack.
Right.
So they're killing they're slowly killing or quickly killing the system that allows our government to function.
Well, then let me, I want to play a soundbite. I mean, this is how bad it is. In 2018, when she was running for election, Letitia James flat out said, yeah, I'm going to sue Trump. Now, not like I said earlier, not like I'm going to investigate Trump. And if he's done something wrong, I guarantee you I'll sue him. She was just going to sue him. I mean, it was like sue him and then go ahead and find whatever you're going to sue him for. If we could please, Doug, play the lawsuit soundbite.
I'm not going to bother to register to vote because my voice doesn't make a difference, or I'm just one person.
I say one name, Donald Trump. That should motivate you. Get off your ass and vote.
Will you sue him for us?
Oh, we're going to definitely sue him. We're going to be a real pain in the ass. He's going to know my name personally.
I love it. He probably does already.
Now, I mean, Chuck, is that like, I don't even know how you get to be much more outrageous as the chief law enforcement officer for the state of New York, just flat out saying, oh, I'm going to sue Trump. Again, it doesn't say what for, it doesn't say why. I'm just going to sue him to be a pain in the butt, right?
Well, everybody knows that and any prosecutor knows, you want to go after somebody, you always get their bank records and see if they've overvalued their assets. Because if you're applying for a loan, your tendency is to want to show as much net worth as possible. And moreover on that, even if you don't, you can always argue everything is worth less. I mean, it's just, it's an all-purpose indictment that can be done against virtually anybody. And it's disgusting that's what our system has gotten down to.
Well, and I don't understand, and you're the lawyer, how can she file? Now, she said she wants to refer it for a criminal to the IRS, I guess, indictment.
DOJ.
DOJ. And they'll say, oh, no, this isn't right. How can she file? And the lawsuit seeks to ban him from doing any kind of business, real estate deals. How can she file a civil lawsuit against him? Isn't she supposed to? Can you explain that?
She can figure out some. Yeah. For a civil lawsuit. I mean, it's pathetic. It just shows you that you have a country, and certainly the Democratic Party, who doesn't care about the rules. They don't really care about anything.
Yes, Sandra says, I bet she's a Soros AG. I'm sure she is. I mean, almost all of the Democrats are Soros AGs and the district attorneys. And I think the conservative trios is mentioning previously she tried to investigate him for undervaluing his assets and not paying enough taxes, right? So now she's going to turn on and argue he's overvaluing. And here's the thing, you know, will she win? Will she prevail? That's kind of tricky to say, but it's yet another thing. Like she said, she's going to be a pain to him. And it's yet another thing that Trump has to deal with. Just like they're using Ron DeSantis, right? He can fly, you know, Biden can fly the illegal aliens all over the place, and that's okay. DeSantis does it, and all of a sudden now he's kidnapping, and a sheriff, they find some hack sheriff to say he's going to investigate DeSantis for kidnapping them. I mean, you're right.
If you wanted to, you could sue George Soros in virtually every Republican jurisdiction for something.
Right.
And maybe that has to be done, because if any kind of weapon that's just used by one side and not the other becomes a one-sided war. I mean, George Soros ought to be sued in all these jurisdictions.
Except he can't be, because he's, I mean, again, you see the strategy basically behind the whole thing. So you have, I mean, it takes money, right? So you've got somebody like George Soros who has a ton of money, and he spends his money to get these people.
You're talking about AGs who have the governmental power, doesn't it?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So for Republicans to file the lawsuits, that all takes money, right? And so that's hard to do. But what Soros did that was so smart and evilly clever is he gets these people into elected office where it's our tax dollars are funding all of the lawsuits, right?
There ought to be some AG Republicans filing against George Soros for who knows what, but you can invent something.
Well, and here it goes back to, this is why election integrity is so important. So she's in a really tight race with the Republican AG. Now, you got to hope, although you never know when it comes to Trump, that if the Republican AG comes in, he will drop this, right? And hopefully drop all kinds of behavior like that, just these constant. And same thing, if a Republican wins the presidency, hopefully Trump, he'll say, okay, we're going to quit raiding me. But that gets back to the importance of election integrity, which is, you know, a whole issue in and of itself, don't you think?
Well, sure. I mean, you're never going to have accountability as long as the elections are rigged. And so it's great that places like Florida actually, you know, made real efforts to prevent election fraud. And, you know, one of the things that's happening is that the election fraud would occur in jurisdictions that are urban. And therefore, the DAs have refused to bring him in Milwaukee, Philadelphia. So what DeSantis wisely did, he said, great, I'll have a statewide office. You don't need to go to the local DA to get action. We'll have a statewide office for election fraud. So.
Right.
He's always a few steps ahead of the rest of Republicans.
Yeah. Thank goodness. So I see Victoria Lundquist has entered the waiting room. If we could go ahead and admit her, because she's going to come on at 3:30. Well, it is 3:30 to talk about the Reagan Roundup. So let's see. Is she there? Let me see if Victoria is there yet. Hey, Victoria, are you there yet? See, she's being admitted. I think Victoria, if you can hear me, go ahead and turn your microphone and your camera on. It's hard to see. There you are.
There we go. Now can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Now we can hear you.
All right. Awesome.
Well, we have Victoria Lundquist with us. I'm with the Adams County Republican Party, and she's actually, I'll give her a plug here too. The
Republican women, Julie, you always get that wrong.
She's doing the roundup for the Adams County Republican Party, but she is with Adams County Republican Women.
Which is
a great organization. So I purchased our tickets today. Very easy to do. Just go to the county website, or you have posters there too. But why don't you tell people what we're talking about and why it's going to be such a good idea to go?
All right. Thank you so much, Julie and Chuck, for letting me come on. So the Adams County Republican Party they have two fundraisers a year, the Lincoln Dinner and the Reagan Roundup. So so this year, the Reagan Roundup's on October 1st, 6 to 11. We have a lot of good things going on. We have Randy Corcoran he's won the RNC committee man. He's also on KNUS radio station. He's going to be there broadcast live
from
the Reagan Center, 5 to 7. Then we have Vera Ortegon, which she's the committee woman of the RNC for Colorado. And then we will be having a Colorado local comedian come and do a, lighten up the atmosphere. He's conservative. He's, along with our values, he's kind of like-minded with us at how important this election is, how important it is to get our state to come back to these conservative values. So he wanted to take part in this. So we thought that was really exciting. And then we also have an award-winning country. She's a world, I guess she's got a huge title here. Multi-award winning champion country dancer, and she's bringing her team. She's going to do a couple skits, get everybody involved dancing country style. This is where it's called Ronald Reagan, so it does have the country feel to it. We're going to have it's dinner, dancing, and kids activities. We do have some whole area set up for kids games. And, you know, we have that corn toss game that adults play also, which they could play if they wanted. The area is big enough that we've got the patio area. The dining room and the dancing area are somewhat separate. So that if you just want to go enjoy dinner, mingle with each other, even see the candidates, because the candidates are coming. We have candidate tables set up. We have a silent auction. So there'll be lots of fun things to do for the whole family. Or whether, and if you don't want to bring your kids there, it'll still be nice for husband and wife to have a time out and at the same time be with like-minded people to share all the things going on, getting ramped up for this election and trying to get our candidates elected in this election.
And I'd like to make sure that anyone who's not in Adams County, feel free to come and participate.
Oh, agreed. Oh, yes.
And as a practical matter, this event was to be run by the rhinos in the party, but they got so outrageous and out of control that they got kicked off. And so Pipula Victoria and great real Republicans have taken over, and we need to support her and the whole thing. So I want to welcome everybody from wherever county you're in to come. It's at the Ranch Country Club. That's a great place. Go play a couple holes. No, they won't let you.
Gorgeous views, though. If people haven't been there, Rev has golf lessons there, and they've got gorgeous views at the ranch. That's a great venue to have. No, and I think you're right. Yeah, again, to emphasize, yeah, Randy Corcoran's from Douglas County, right? And then in Arapahoe County. Yeah, you don't have to be from Adams County. We're going to be there. Like I said, I got the tickets today. And I think it's, we were just talking earlier, Victoria, about how, this attorney general in New York is filing a lawsuit against Trump. I mean, it starts with local candidates like district attorneys, sheriffs. I mean, all of these, the local candidates matter a lot. And we have to take control of those local elections. And that's where you can start having an impact. You know, the national stuff can kind of not take care of itself, but there are other people working on that, right? This is from.
I totally agree. I haven't been in politics my whole life and just got started in 2016. And I will have to admit, I'm one of the reasons why Colorado's sitting here. I did not realize how important our local elections are. Yeah. It's affected our school boards. It's affected our city, right where we live, right in our backyard, right, all the way up to the state and then to the federal. And I'm finding out a lot of our citizens, they don't understand the whole election process. They don't understand how much their decision in November, whether it's primary or the regular four-year election, how important it is to vote in our midterms.
Yep, I absolutely agree. And I think it, plus it's fun. I've started going to some of the Adams County Republican Party meetings, and it's they're great people who go there. And like you said, you get a chance to mingle with, dance with if you want, or just, chat with people, like you said, who are like-minded. And I think particularly in this day and age, we need to remind ourselves, we are not the minority, right? There are millions of us. And you get with other people and you realize, oh yeah. And I think you're right. It's a great time too. You can talk to the candidates. Mm-hmm. If you say you can, I'm sure they're happy to take any kind of donation. You can pick up yard signs or figure out how to do that. It's if you want to get involved, but in a low key kind of area, without a lot of money or energy or things like that, this is a kind of event.
Don't get energy, Julie.
Huh?
You can't get rid of energy.
but what I mean, though, is you can go to an event like this and you can find out very small ways to get involved, right? You don't have to donate.
Exactly.
You go here and you talk to people. They're like, well, you could do this. You could do that. And it's great.
Yeah. This is one way to donate, meaning this is a fundraiser and just purchasing your tickets to come. You're also putting into giving us the ability to do things for these candidates that we're trying to get elected, trying to get their name out. And you're right. I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
No, that's right. You're doing a great job, Victoria. Just a final question for you. This one's an easy one. Where do people go if they're like, hey, that does sound like fun. I'd like to get some tickets. Where should they go and how do they go about that?
They can go to Adams County Republican Women website or Adams County GOP, and there's a flyer on there. It's got a QR code. All you have to do is click on it, and it'll take you right to purchasing your tickets. One thing I do need to mention is if you get your tickets by the 22nd, which we're almost there, you still can take advantage of the discount. So if you get two people to go, whether it's couple or you and a friend, you can pay the $130 for that price rather than $150, because they're $80 a piece for a single. So okay. That's one way that you're giving to the party. You get to go to something fun and at the same time find out what you can do and who you can get involved with and how, you know, with this climate, it's everybody's kind of on edge a little bit. And a lot of conservatives won't open up their mouth. They're afraid to even talk with one another, I'm finding. And this way is a place to learn more, to be able to express yourself. And then also it's an event that they can have fun at.
There you go. Can't beat
all
that.
Right. Well, Victoria, thank you for all the hard work you've done on this. And thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you. And then bye-bye. You can just go ahead and turn your camera off and your mic off. All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Victoria Lundquist there. I think, like I said, we bought our tickets. And I think whether it's the Adams County one or all of them, I think it's important to support that kind of stuff. And it'll be good to see Randy. I haven't seen Randy in a while, huh, Chuck?
You have to ask about your lawsuit.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, let's see. We have a little bit of time left. Do you want to talk about the Denver mayoral race, or did you want to?
Well, we can. I mean, you know, I'm writing an editorial. It's the business community abandoning Denver to its fate. Yeah. And you really think that this election, if they elect Debbie Ortega, who is a long-term Denver City Council person and very
28
radical.
Years. She's been 28 years. Debbie Ortega has been a Denver City Councilwoman.
or the other one is a state representative.
Leslie Harrod,
who's even worse.
I mean, what if she promotes herself as the first LGBTQ black person elected to the state house in 2016. And right. She doesn't, I mean, you don't get much more. I don't think you get any more progressive than Leslie Harrod, right? No. And you know, if you like Denver the way it looks like now, well, you've got Debbie Ortega. She's been there for 28 years, right? And I think another person is out there possibly is Lisa Calderon, who is Candice DeBacca's, I think, partner and former chief of staff. And Lisa or Candice DeBacca is openly a communist, right?
Right. So, well, the other ones, there are some other ones. You do have Kelly Bruff, who is the head of the Denver Chamber of Commerce, which is a pretty left-wing organization, but compared to Leslie Harrod, she's a rock-solid conservative.
Right. Well, and she was Hickenlooper's chief of staff, right, when he was mayor?
Uh-huh. I think she's with Metropolitan State now as some kind of weird.
I think she might have resigned that because she's running, I think.
And then there are a ton of, you know, the usual suspects who run every time and don't. You know, if the auditor might run, he'd be an interesting candidate. I think if you want to have somebody who isn't just going to destroy the city, and the city has been effectively destroyed in large part by Mayor Hancock, who has announced that he is moving down to Miami, Florida.
You're kidding me. Having destroyed Denver, I now can't stand to live in here because it's too crummy. Well, it is. And I think it's not just Denver. I think there are broader implications here. But you have cities now that are being faced with a choice. And, you know, you get what you vote for. You're being faced with the choice of, do you want to live in what these progressive hellholes, the homelessness, the crime, the businesses abandoning the city, people fleeing from the city. Denver, for the first time ever, is losing people as opposed to gaining people. So you have those candidates. If you do, then vote for somebody like Leslie Harrod. Like you said, Kelly Bruff is certainly not a conservative, but she at least, I imagine, would be interested in preventing the city from going completely down the toilet, don't you think?
Yes. She was the babysitter for our beloved Councilman Ed Thomas. And every time I see her, she always says, well, here comes trouble. but among the candidates, she's certainly far better than some of them.
Well, I think what's going to happen, and again, you see this happening in other cities. I was in, as I said, Charlotte over the weekend, and we were in downtown Charlotte, and it was gorgeous. I mean, the streets were packed, the businesses were packed. You couldn't get an Uber to save your life because they were so busy. And it was, everything looked new. I didn't see any homeless encampments there. Now, maybe they cleaned it out around the stadium because there was a concert, but in Denver, they can't even do that. And you look at that and you're like, geez, where would I want to live, right? And you look at people in downtown Denver. I had a friend who was complaining that a family or a couple had parked their non-working car, it didn't work anymore, in front of her house, and were essentially living in the car in front of her house in sort of the core part of kind of the Cherry Creek area, right? And they were defecating and, I mean, everything in her yard. And she would call the police, and the police like, we can't do anything, and we're not going to do anything. And I just said to her, well, who'd you vote for? You know, what did you think was going to happen when you vote for these people? It's just crazy.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, the Denver voters will give one last chance to save the city before it goes totally Chicago, totally New York.
This is from Sandra. She said, Denver was always a great city. I loved it and lived there for over 30 years. And it, what an effing hellhole now. Glad I'm out of there. And then Sandra said, Stephen says, Sandra, I told a friend from Oklahoma whose wife is here for a concert with their daughter to not stay downtown and be careful wherever she stays. When I mentioned earlier, I ran into a photographer that I used to work with who said they don't send crews downtown anymore. And you have the Downtown Denver Business Partnership. I mean, you just want to smack them sometimes to some sense into them. They talk about how, oh, you know, we have to provide affordable housing. It's like, but in the meantime, we're losing all of our businesses. And, you know, we don't want to move the homeless people here. But on the other hand, they are causing people to leave. They're attacking employees. And it's like they need to wake up, don't you think, Chuck, and realize these are not homeless people who have no options and nowhere to go. These are people who have decided because the government hands them out. Now Denver's going to start paying them, what, $500 to be homeless? These are people who spend their whole day.
A little over $1,000 a month.
Right. They spend their whole day getting high. Then they sleep wherever they want. I mean, these are people who have options. These are not people, you know, I think sometimes people think of if these people had affordable housing, there is affordable housing. They just don't go there because they don't want to, because they don't have jobs, because they don't want to. And they're like, how can we solve it? It's getting worse. And it's getting worse because you keep giving them more free things, right? Of course, it's getting worse. If I was a young person, I'm like, man, I could be homeless and I could get paid $1,000 a month. It's like, you know, what the heck? And they wonder, why are more people homeless? It's like, well, you know, I mean, the Step 13 guy used to say, you know, don't feed the birds, so to speak, or don't feed the bears, right? And that's what Denver keeps doing. And then they turn around and say, how can we deal with the homeless situation?
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. But as you said, elections make all the difference. So we'll have one coming up in November, then one in the spring for Denver. And maybe a candidate, maybe the business community will come back and support a Kelly Brough or something. And not the Leslie Harrods of the world.
You know, you got to wonder that because in Denver, the mayoral election, usually it's sort of like a jungle primary, right? Where, I mean, they just, there always are runoffs and right. It'll be interesting to see. But I kind of wonder if the business community, like the developers, I guess I'm talking about there, have largely abandoned Denver. I mean, under Hancock, they developed every square inch of developable land, and there isn't anything left anymore. And you got to wonder if they've gone. And I mean, the state and the city are just, you know, so out of control with crime and things like that, that if, you know, if I'm a developer, I'm not going to try to convince people to come to Denver. I mean, so do you see that? You see what I'm saying there? That I wonder if there is a business community willing to support her anymore.
Well, you know, I don't know if there is. As a practical matter, the business community did support Denver board members that would be for choice and charter schools, and which was particularly popular with Hispanics and Asians and all that. And they just gave up. And so now you've got a dysfunctional board that just fights.
The school board, you mean?
School board. And the schools are getting worse and worse. So they've abandoned the schools. And abandoning the schools means you've sort of given up.
Well, I think so too, because it all business, I mean, a lot of it starts there, right? When people look for places to live, schools, obviously, I mean, it's why we moved out of Denver. One of the reasons, but, you know, again, I look at the way I used to drive to work and it's just full of homeless encampments. And yes, there are some nice, charming neighborhoods in Denver, but the crime is out of control. I mean, you know, and it's the same in all of Colorado. And these are similar elections being played out all across the country. And I go back to, this is why election integrity matters. You'd think, you know, people need to get the Republicans get their head around that, because without that, you can run the best campaign imaginable and you can have all the support, but the outcome is still in question.
Certainly true in Colorado.
What is your editorial? Give people a sneak peek of your editorial.
It's just pointing out that you know, the Denver Post had an article on August 23rd saying restaurants are leaving downtown because of rent hikes and labor shortages. Denver Partnership says that workers are refusing to go to the business district anymore. About a quarter of the office space is empty, and there's proposals to turn office space into apartment houses.
I mean, Well, I know, and this is from Sandra. Wait till the homeless set up their tents in Bonnie Bray. Well, Sandra, I don't think they necessarily set their tents up there, but you're seeing a ton of businesses, longtime businesses, leave Bonnie Bray. And the way they put it there, because they're all, you know, touchy-feely Denverites, is they say the neighborhood is changing. It's like, what do you mean the neighborhood is changing? Well, the neighborhood is changing. It's becoming crime-ridden, you know, homeless people. And again, to say homeless, these are just, they're panhandling constantly, aggressively panhandling. So it is affecting.
Well, they've come to Westminster, and the Westminster City Council has had a very tepid, weak response for them.
Oh, yeah, they're going to be compassionate. It's like, there's nothing compassionate. And I think Stephen was saying, I think that he had an Aurora police officer say some of it started with the legalization of marijuana, and that's absolutely true. But you know what? As other states have legalized it, we haven't seen the decrease. So, and again, I think the longer, if you keep supporting them and paying them and allowing them to live the way that you do, you know, to take up residence. I mean, when you drive down Sixth Avenue, there's one intersection there. I think it's at Sixth and Broadway. And all the businesses have like barricades in front of them, right? And it's not that they're worried about terrorists. They just have to put something there because they can't move the homeless. So they have all these god awful barricades there so people can't camp there. I mean, there's something wrong with the city when that's what's going on. And so do you want to walk through that? No. So the Denver mayoral election is important, not just for Denver, I think, but all of Colorado, don't you?
I agree.
Right. Okay. Right. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay, that is going to do it for us. I want to thank Doug, as always, the BBS guys, everybody on Zoom, all our shows at chuckandjulie.com. And thank you to Cheryl and Victoria. And also,
I'll be taking over the helm on Friday.
That's right. I've got
a boys' night out and a lot of fun.
That's right. Well, Brian Junedepth is going to be joining us on Friday. He has some interesting stuff about the Martha's Vineyard thing. So thank you to everybody. We'll see you on Party Friday.
Take care,
have a great rest of your week.
Bye-bye.